Hello and welcome to the second segment of the fifth episode of LDS Women's Book Review. I'm here with my friends Sheila and Hillary. I'm Shanda. We're here to talk about My Not-So-Fairy Tale Life by Julie Wright and Letters by Marjorie Pay Hinckley. There's a lot of news going on, but that's in the first podcast, so if you want to hear it, go ahead and listen to that first segment. And then also we'll talk about the contest that we talked about in the previous segment at the end of this one, so you're going to want to hang in there, listen to the discussions on the books, and we'll go into that before we end. All right, let's get started talking about my Not-So-Fairy Tale Life by Julie Wright.
I guess I should start with my confession.
Yes.
I'm only on chapter 3 of this book, so I can't really contribute a whole lot, but I will say this, so far, so good. And if you guys give away any part of it, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Because like I said before, I may not have time to finish it so I can read the ones for next month. So.
Yeah. Well, it actually went really by really quickly. I was able to finish it in
four or five hours. Kind of
I couldn't put it down. I really couldn't. I had a hard time putting it down. It was one of those books that, you know, on the question you ask on the one of the polls, you know, do you snack? No, I take mine to the dinner table. I've always had that problem since I was a little girl.
Yeah, I like to eat while I read.
So,
I'm a nail biter when I read. I don't even think about it. That's why I don't have any nails because I guess I read too much.
But no kidding. Look at that.
That's my nail.
There's no reading too much.
You don't need
fingernails.
I don't really need them.
What you need to do is go get acrylic ones that you can't gnaw off, and then you can just chew on them.
Chewing, and they look horrible, and I just wasted $25 on acrylic nails. So I've learned my lesson.
I love the book.
Yeah, I did too. It's different.
Really, really. You know, I didn't particularly like Susie's character at the very beginning because
she's kind of mean.
It really reminded me a lot of my sister during her rebellious years.
Really?
And it was just like, you know, she couldn't give a care, I wanted to say another word, about, she didn't give a flip about anybody or anything, you know? And a lot of that had to do with self-esteem issues and what she had been through with Doris, her mother. But it just... I never, ever had that situation, so I can't really be real judgmental of the character. But.
Well, you know what was hard for me to read was, like when Doris was giving her a hard time about wanting to go to her brother's wedding. You should go to your brother's wedding. And she was acting like she wasn't going to go, even though she was, be difficult.
That was just to be difficult. And I was like, exactly. I got that far, and I thought,
but that's just what bothered me, is just to be difficult. Simply because... I mean, y'all know that everything wasn't rosy. I had a parent that was abusive.
And difficult.
And my thing was just not doing what he wanted me to do as far as, you know, coming upstairs, calling me upstairs to hand him the phone that's 4 feet away from him. Just because he could. I did the things that were right to do, like go to a wedding. I never did things that would have been, a normal, quote-unquote, person would just be doing. We did those things. It was just the stuff that, you know, if I say jump, you say how high, I'd say no way. Is that, you know, but as far as a wedding, it would never have crossed my mind.
It was her brother's wedding. That's what got me.
And she loves her brother, though.
Yes.
It's exactly. Like get that impression right away. And they have a very close bond, you get that right away too.
Very close.
Even though she doesn't necessarily agree with the cult that he's joined.
Yes.
which is the Mormon church. And, you know, I liked that this book wasn't based on a person who was already a member of the church. But as a young girl she's 22.
Right.
And a lot of girls are in her position. She dyed her hair black except for one long tail part that was blue. She, you know, altered her bridesmaid dress.
To make it kind of sexy looking.
Risque. But, you know, she did that for shock value.
Exactly. That's the main thing that she did.
That was the main thing.
There was no other reason why she did that.
Shock value. But it was somebody's wedding. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And I think that I would not have reacted any differently than April having my jaw drop.
Exactly. It was her wedding.
And it was a $300 dress.
Ugh, I know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just for shock value. I guess I don't understand.
I understand in a way simply because I have another family member who did things strictly for shock value. And she's since tamed down a bit. In fact, she's one of my favorite people, to be honest with you. I love her dearly. But when we first got married, she did a lot of stuff just because she knew it would make us go,
exactly.
Just for that very reason. But you know what? She grew out of it.
Well, it's just as the character does in the book. But, you know, I have
but
to
she
say...
But she was kind of... She kind of had to grow out of it.
Well, she was
she
forced
was forced to.
Yes, she was.
You know, and I can't imagine, even... And I'm a very, you know, regular person as far as cycles go, but to not even know you were pregnant...
There are so
it
many
happens a lot.
People that are like that, though.
And you wouldn't know because you are, because she was irregular. You know, and it's just, I can't, but to find out after a major car accident.
That would be scary.
That would be really scary. But then to not even want the pregnancy. But what happened at the clinic that she went to, that was, my heart was just racing, and I was just there with her. While she was talking, you know, waiting for the doctors are getting ready to do the procedure, and she saw what I was hoping she would see. That baby growing in her, and especially the way Doris was like, we need to take care of this, we need to get rid of this problem. If it, you know, if I could have done this when I got pregnant with your brother and you, I would have done it.
I know.
And, you know, and she realized that's, this baby is Sam, her brother, who... If her mom had terminated that pregnancy, she wouldn't have had her brother, and
or
she probably wouldn't even be there.
Yeah, maybe she wouldn't have had either one of them.
And to see the heartbeat and the ultrasound, I think they should make people watch the ultrasounds. I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. No, we have agency. I personally would never do it, but just because that is an innocent life, but that's only my opinion. But to see, to actually walk through this experience with her and have her, you know, suddenly wait
exactly
as she makes that connection between, you know, this baby is going to be somebody, and it could be somebody's big brother that they need, or
coming from my perspective, I am an adopted child. I had a 16-year-old mother. That could have been me also. So, you know, that really hit me too, because my birth mom could have had an abortion also.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been taken care of it very easily, and I wouldn't be here either, so.
And that would just be a shame.
That
I
would
know,
be a shame.
Where
no
would
kidding
this podcast be?
Yeah, no kidding. You
know? But it happens every day. Hundreds and hundreds of times every day. And, you know, to see her growth through... Oh, I loved her reaction when she felt the baby really kick for the first time.
Yes, I love
when
that.
When she said, oh, cool, wicked. Because she finally realized, but her friend Gina... Oh, that's like aliens. That's gross. And I don't think it, you can fully appreciate it until you feel.
Until you've carried a baby and felt the kicks.
And all
wonderful
of us have. But then you, on the flip side, there's people like Anne and Michael, the adopted parents, that once Susie decides that she is going to give her baby up for adoption, and the way she, you know, gets that confirmation, everything that happens, and it's just, it's very life-changing for her to make that decision. And I think that the reactions of the people around her when she announces that she's made that decision are true to life. Because the first thing they ask is, are you sure about this? This is a big decision. They try to be supportive, and they're still, you know, they ask a few more questions about it. When she tells them how, you know, she feels about it, then they're supportive. And I think that wouldn't be any different than anybody else's reactions if one of our siblings were to, you know, get pregnant young or unexpectedly or not feel prepared to take care of a baby and decided to give it up because we are, you know, because as a family, you feel that desire to, you know, that baby is a member of your family. Yes, Hillary?
You say, well, that's kind of like in Shadow of a Doubt. That same situation happens with the girl what's her name?
Yeah.
Melissa.
Shadow of Doubt. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, and they handled it a little bit differently. Now, granted, I didn't get that far in the book, but the way you're describing it is different than how they handled it in the other one. So, interesting how everybody deals with it differently.
Well, she didn't, in Shadow of Doubt, Missy decided after she'd had the baby, they were going to give it a go and see if they could keep the baby. Mary, her mother, was going to support Missy. But in this one, she's all on her own. She has no mom, no dad. She was kicked out of the house. And so she goes to her brother in Utah from...
Newly married.
Yeah, newly married. And
that would be so hard.
But they welcomed her. You know, they welcomed her, and they said, of course, April, the wife, was kind of like, what
at
are you
first
doing here?
Right.
And but then, you know, they welcomed her, and they didn't like her attitude sometimes, and they...
But they
you
kept
know, but
loving
they,
her.
But they loved her.
They kept loving her through the whole thing, and at the end, April is one of her best friends and one of her biggest supporters.
Right, well, then for her to come in and accidentally... Oh. For... Susie to come and accidentally overhear them talking about how they'd already talked about possibly raising the child.
Exactly.
And that they prayed and fasted about it and they knew it wasn't right, the right time. And then to see them pray for her again, that was a big... I don't care how hard you are, but if you see someone sincerely concerned about you and who's praying for you and they don't... And they know that you don't know about it, that's not, they're not doing it for appearances, but because they sincerely care, that's got to touch a part of you.
Mm-hmm. And I think everything that happens in this story, she can't get over the fact that when people are doing things for her because they love her, not because they want something mm-hmm. from her.
Especially Ryan.
Yes, with Ryan. Oh, Ryan.
Oh, yes.
You know, she can't get over that fact that he's not wanting something from her. Because every other guy always wanted something from her, you know, whether it was, you know, relations or, you know, to get drunk with or whatever. I mean, she'd never met someone like Ryan that just wanted to be her friend, mm-hmm. wanted to get to know her. And well, and her parents, they always wanted something from her, too. She could... Okay, I want to talk about the parents really fast.
Go ahead.
I hate Doris. Did not like her. But you know who I disliked more than Doris? Was her father. Because mm-hmm. he did not stand up for his children. He would not stand up to Doris. And I've never been in a situation like this. Maybe I don't understand it, but I just... Why could he not stand up to this woman and defend his children?
But she talks about how she... when Susie was in rehab, when she had been, I think she'd been using drugs, she went into rehab and she realized there why he didn't. Because he was afraid to be alone. He was afraid to be alone.
You know what? You'll find somebody better out there. It's really irritating.
But coming from my mom.
Exactly.
You know, and I had a hard time. Sometimes I still, even knowing how she felt, and she's told me she just doesn't want to be alone. You know, she didn't want to be alone. It was very hard for her to think about taking her children's father away.
But, you know, and my grandparents were in the same situation. Mm-hmm. He was an alcoholic. He was abusive to the children and to his wife. My grandma divorced him, mm-hmm. you know, and it was hard. She was a single mom with 5 kids.
Well, if it were me, especially going through what I've been through, I wouldn't hesitate. Be the first thing.
I know.
But you know, for my mom didn't have a lot of self-confidence. And I think that was a lot of his problem, too, is he didn't have a lot of self-confidence. And he was in love with her. He was in love with her at a certain... But then he got to a certain point where that was gone. But they were already married, and they already had kids. And
I know. It's a cycle, and you're in this, and you can't get out.
It is. And
I know. It just irritated me,
though. It's a sad thing. It's a sad thing. No, you know, everyone's situation's different. And that, you know, isn't any kind of abuse. You know, we hear there's a lot of people I know that have been through similar things or worse things mm-hmm. and ask themselves the same question. Why did my mom or dad stick around for that? Well, I can tell you right now, I don't ever want to know what it would feel like to have an abusive spouse.
Yeah.
I don't want to be faced with that decision. I can't fault them because I don't know what I would do if suddenly I were faced with that. No. I know what I would like to do, what I probably would do. I'd be out of there fast, but I didn't. But I had that experience. If I didn't, what would you do?
Exactly, and until you're in that situation, you really don't know. I mean, the thing that I kept thinking was the fact that if I knew that my spouse was abusing my children, I would do anything to protect my kids. I am a grizzly mother bear, you know, a grizzly bear mother that just, you know, I would do anything to protect my children. Mm-hmm. You know, regardless if it's their father, you know, abusing them or whoever, it's just really hard for me at times. Mm-hmm. I have to remember, you know what? I have to be reasonable when in defending my children. And
well, I'm with you. I would be. I would never let my children.
I just wouldn't put them through that, regardless of whether what would happen to me. And I know what Dr. Laura would say.
I don't listen to Dr. Laura.
What would Dr. Laura say? Well, she would say that your children come first.
Get out of there.
You know, forget about your life. You know what? So what if you're going to be lonely? You take care of those children. Mm-hmm. You decided to bring those children into the world, so you need to take care of them.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd agree with her.
I think I'd have to agree, too. And I don't have any experience with any kind of abuse, thank heavens. Mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. I'm definitely lucky on that end, but... I can say, and now it's easy for me to say, oh yeah, I just walk away. But I think if my husband, heaven forbid, ever did anything to our children that would be over the line, that would be
abusive. You wonder, like, do I stay away?
That's a difficult choice, because I love my husband.
Well, do you stay and help him? Because
do you make him help him get better, or is that just something that you can't even fix?
It's so hard.
They have to make the decision for themselves, and you have to stick around long enough to find out if they're going to make that decision for themselves. But then at the same time, you're risking your children. And there's that line. It's such a fine line, but you have to know where it is, so if it is crossed...
Exactly.
You know what it's time for.
Because we saw what happened to her children. Luckily, Sam was able to get out. He found the church. He was able to save his life, right? You know, you could say. Whereas Susie, she just kept going downhill and kept falling into this hole and then fell even deeper, and she could never claw her way out until the car accident and finding out she was pregnant. And then that is the thing that changed her
life. Even then, it wasn't instantaneous.
No, it was not.
It was a few steps on in the right direction.
Right.
And what do they say about a journey? The hardest thing is the first step.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and sometimes we kind of have to be pushed.
Well, and that bus ride.
Yes.
Bus ride.
Where she met
changed
Ryan.
Changed her life, too.
I liked that. I liked the bus ride.
I love Ryan.
I felt so bad for her when she was, you know, thinking, I have 12,000 more miles to go before I can eat.
Oh, and then, she's pregnant.
But then Ryan just knew when he bought her food.
Yes,
and the way she ate it, you know, she's like, around every seed of the apple and everything.
She didn't leave any bite unturned, did she?
And that was just sweet. That was really sweet of Ryan. And one thing I was wondering is if Chris was going to come back. Because Chris was her guy friend that was interested in her in the beginning, but she said, no, nothing can ever happen there. And I think she recognized, because of the kind of person that he was, she talked about how she thought into the future what kind of a spouse she would want.
Right.
And he didn't fit the category. So even though she was living this lifestyle where you'd think they would be perfect for each other, she, in her heart, knew or wanted or wished or hoped for something much better than that.
Don't you think she was... I really admired Susie when she was very honest with him. Because it would have been so easy to have said, okay, here I am pregnant. Yeah, let's go ahead and get married. You know, just taking any offer that was someone wanting to take care of her and the baby. It would have been so easy for her to have said, yeah. You know?
I was kind of torn the way he cared for the little angel. I mean, he talked about the baby. He wanted to feel it.
Yes.
And I was thinking, too bad he couldn't have been... You know, I was wondering, is he going to change too, or is he ever going to come into the picture again? But then once she met Ryan on the bus, I was like, oh.
Yeah, yes, no more
this
Chris.
Is, yeah, but then, I mean, how difficult would it be to be Ryan? Because you are this returned missionary, laid-back guy. You meet this pregnant woman who's just prickly.
You can
on the
tell
bus.
He's very wild, has led a wild lifestyle.
And he's kind to her just out of the sake of being kindness, because that's what he is. He's a Christian person.
That's who he is.
And he's nice to her. But then as they get to know each other, and as he starts to care for her and she starts to care for him, that's where it gets difficult because of our standards of not recommending don't marry outside the church.
He sort of backs off a little bit and starts dating other people at work and...
That was kind of hard because, you know, you do have to keep that distance. And sometimes it frustrates me because if you love somebody, why not just... But I knew before I met my husband that I needed to marry someone who was my same religion. Because even though I wasn't active at the time, I didn't doubt the truthfulness of the church. I just hadn't found where I needed to be yet. And I knew that I needed to find someone who was a member of the church. Because I'd seen friends who had parents that were, one was Mormon, one was Catholic.
It just makes it so much harder.
Or one was just
no
religion whatsoever. And I can't imagine my kids, you know, which one are they going to choose? Come on, stay home with dad or go to church with mom?
And sometimes it pits parents against their children, too. Mm-hmm. They use that as leverage.
It's an automatic.
That is pretty bad.
It's guaranteed conflict.
That's hard.
It's guaranteed conflict, and I didn't want that. So Ryan was faced with that, too. I really like her, but I can't pursue this. Okay, I want to talk about Anne and Michael.
Okay.
Quickly.
Okay.
Because that's the couple that she decided on. She prayed. And I don't know how that goes directly because I've never...
I've been involved in that.
Yeah, so
because we were the adoptive couple.
But is it... I can't imagine how difficult it must be being one of 20 couples in this book and you have to pick one. Mm-hmm. And for the person doing the picking... I can see where one or two might stand out more than all the others because you have this idea in your head.
Let me tell you what they do. If this, you know, through LDS Family Services, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of files out there. Mm-hmm. And basically what the birth worker does, she knows the birth mom
basically what birth mom is looking for. So every week she'll pull out 10 to 20 files, hand it to the birth mom. And birth mom looks through and goes, you know what? There's nobody here that I really feel good about, or she's prayed about it. Then there she's handed 20 more files or 10 more files. And so she keeps looking through file after file after file after file. And so that's what the process is. And some of these girls, some of the young girls, maybe they're praying about it, maybe they're not. Some of these, I mean, we heard that some of these girls, maybe they're going to choose somebody because they like horses. You know, they haven't got a spiritual confirmation, but you know what? The birth parent or the adoptive people that they're looking at, they have a farm and they have horses. She loves horses, so that's who she's going to give her baby to. It can be something as small as that.
That might be the inspiration, because if that person's not tied into the spirit, then maybe that's the Lord kind of directing them.
Giving a little nudge.
Exactly. I mean, thankfully with ours was definitely a spiritual confirmation after, you know, looking at our file and then coming back to it. And it just, you know, it just depends upon how old the birth mom is, too.
How nerve-wracking is it to be one of the parents in the file?
Oh, it's awful.
You know,
it's really bad because you're thinking, how long has someone chosen me? You know, you think, what's wrong? Or, you know, I mean, it is. And you're just praying so desperately for a baby because that's all that you really want. And you're thinking this is something that is such a righteous desire of your heart. And you're just wondering because, you know, you've tried all these years to get pregnant and nothing ever happened. And then you go this route and you're just thinking, you know, you're just so desperately praying that one of these babies will be yours. And the key is with an adoption, you know, at least through, you know, LDS Family Services, that you have to remember, you're not in competition with those other couples.
Mm-hmm.
When it's your baby, the child that is supposed to come and be a member of your family, then it will happen. You're not in competition with the others. Because there's only one baby that was supposed to be yours, you know, at that mm-hmm. time. And so if you looked at it that way, it made it so much easier knowing that when it's your child, it's going to happen. And, I mean, there is no question that our daughter wasn't supposed to be ours. I mean, you look at my son, who we luckily were able to, you know, have the blessing of being able to get pregnant with him.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at my two children, and they look a lot alike.
Your daughter does look a lot like you.
They do. Our kids look a lot. They have the same little nose. They've got the same big brown eyes. Mm-hmm. They have same hair color. I mean, it just,
even
Heavenly
if they,
Father makes these things happen.
Even if they don't look like you physically, a lot of times the kids just fit. They slide so easily
into
my
husband.
Family.
Ask my husband. We have the same personality, and it's scary.
Really? you and your daughter?
She's just like you. But you know what? As an adoptive parent, it is very nerve-wracking. And then even once you are told that you've been chosen, there's no guarantee.
No. We know people who have been told and then multiple times, and you know, it falls through.
And you saw what Susie went through when she had her baby there at the hospital. And they have that time to be with that baby. And there's always a chance that they are going to change their mind.
I was glad she decided not to take the baby home for a couple of days. That she recognized it in herself that she took the baby home.
When they offered her that she had that opportunity to do that, it's like,
Well, and if you recognize, she recognized, if I take her home, I won't be able to give her up.
Exactly.
You know, I really worried about, the book was almost done, and then she was having this dark 6 months where she was so depressed, and I was thinking,
it happens.
You know, she knows she did the right thing,
but it still happens.
There's that emptiness and everything.
You're going through a grieving process of losing a child, having lost a child. There's a grieving process you go through. It is just the exact same thing. They're still going through a grieving process where they have lost a child, and so
when she was out, when her
what she was going
sister
through.
Asked her to go to girls' camp, I was like, girls' camp.
That was the best
The
book.
But reading it, I was like, wow, that actually turned out really good.
Oh, I loved when she went to girls' camp.
You know that girl that went, the girl that was coming?
Is her name Allison?
Allison, yes. That she sat by Susie because she looked like someone she could relate to.
Yes.
Oh, I wish there were more people like that coming to church on a regular basis.
I agree.
That people could recognize and still be, you know, have testimonies and be committed to attending church and but not be done with their sins, but not abandon a lot of their memories, what it felt like to be excluded, to not be considered good enough or righteous enough or perfect enough to be able to especially young women's. Young women's was hard. Was hard for me. There weren't a lot of girls that I could relate to. But if I had someone who could maybe understand that you can relate to, I think that's so important. And you don't have to be the same kind of person or even have done the same kinds of things. You just need to be open to the spirit, open to inspiration, and just reach out and fellowship. That's all it is.
I think April was very much in tune with her being that leader of that class, of the young women's class, that she knew that this would be a good thing. And see, she knew that if Susie was there, that Allison, she knew that the connection could be made. I mean, that's somebody in tune with their calling. Yeah, that was my first thought. She's so in tune.
There are really people like that. It's not just in fiction.
I know. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You need that.
Well, I think that sums up my not-so-fairy tale life. Would you read it again?
Oh, yes, I would like to read it again. Because I read it so quickly the first time. I'd like to go back for details and just the feeling. I just loved it just because it was neat to get the viewpoint of a birth mom. Uh-huh. And it was good for me. You know, it was good for me to see what she went through and know, you know, get
that. I like the realistic part of it. I mean, yeah, it's a work of fiction, but there was a lot of reality in it. It didn't hide what a lot of teenagers and young adults, the decisions nowadays, the music, the drugs, the parties, lots of parties. Oh, I wanted to talk about this line in here.
The what?
There was a line in one of these chapters that really struck me. And I think I have it on a different page. Let me look on the back of this one.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, page 72. And it really
I feel like we're reading
summed
pictures.
It up. I know.
Return to page 72.
The paragraph reads like this. When I walked in, the party was going strong. Q woman, since Q was her nickname.
Like Susie Q.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A skinny blonde called out with a slur. I tried to smile and say hi, but the smell of the party night immediately made me sick. Cigarette smoke, the sweet fermented smell of alcohol, and the tang of weed were heavy in the air. The scene was loud and disorganized, with people writhing wildly to the music and grinning stupidly. It was a far cry from the calm and peace I yearned for at the moment. And this is the line that got me. For the first time, party night looked to me like a raging pack of animals feasting on each other's hopes.
That was a very interesting one.
A raging pack of animals feasting on each other's hopes. That, I wrote that down because that sums it up right there. Have you ever been watching late night TV and they have the music commercials come on for CD collections of the latest rap music and you mute it, but in the back it has all the people dancing and all the chains and the gyration of the hips and, you know, and I remember late one night, one of those things came on and I don't really like that kind of music, so I hit mute and I looked up on the screen and I saw the large and spacious building. Those were the people in the large and spacious building.
Very good.
That's what it is. We're cool, dance with us, listen to our kind of music, wear what we're wearing, aren't we sexy? It just struck me, and I think if we could just turn off the sound and look at what it looks like, because that's what this described. Riding tech and animals feeding on each other's hopes. You take off the music and then just show the people how they're acting, because music is so influential. I started listening to classical music because I was getting frustrated on the road. It made an enormous difference.
I just listened to talk radio. I'm a nerd. I just listened to talk radio.
Well, it works for me, you know. And so I can't imagine, you know, what it would be like if all of these cool things, we could turn the music off and just
see what it is.
Without
for it.
I agree. Hearing the influence of the music.
I agree. That's interesting. Very good analogy there.
Yeah, even in a movie. Would it make, you know, would the movie...
It'd be totally
would it
different.
Make a difference?
You bet
these
it would.
Scenes and movies, if the sound was off and you were just kind of watching, it wouldn't it seem kind of inappropriate, like you were spying?
It would be totally inappropriate.
Anyway, that's just my thought. So, is it a keeper?
It is a total keeper, and I'll tell you one of the main reasons why. I want to have this book in my collection for my teenage daughter, when she's a teenager, to read through this. And I'm not saying, I don't know which way her life is going to go. Hopefully it won't go this way. But,
it's not provoking.
It is. It makes you stop and think. So, and I just want to keep it. I love. I like her writing style. I think Julie Wright is a great author.
She is an awesome.
And that's
author.
Why I put a few of her books on hold at the library.
I'm excited to read more. I really am. Yeah. I don't know if I would say this was a keeper for me, except for maybe for that same reason. that I want my daughter to read it when she gets older.
Also the adoption aspect for me.
Yes.
It explains things so well.
We keep picking these books that are not intentionally. I think it's great.
Part of it touched your life.
Yes, with the abuse and everything.
Yeah.
Well, this was definitely a good book. And as far, I do think I would like to keep it mainly so that it's something that my daughters and I can read and talk about later.
Right. You bet.
I do.
Great discussions can come out of this.
Thanks, Julie, for writing this good book. Just in case you ever listen to the podcast.
Good job.
We liked it. Okay, now on to the next book.
Okay.
Letters.
All the places I have saved.
Yes, you have. we're already half an hour into this one. This one's going to be another long one.
Okay.
This is good, though, because there are some things in here that I just can't wait to talk about. That was so cute.
I agree.
She is one cute lady.
Oh, isn't she funky?
I love Marjorie. She says some of the funniest things I read, and I just went, who says that? That is so adorable.
Well, look what I wrote here. Love her one-liners.
She's great.
One-liners.
You know, she's from the same area as my grandma, and so so many of the things that she says and the way she talks and their little things that she says, it's just like, oh, that's like my grandma used to say that. You know,
I loved reading about all of it. The thing that really struck me is, as I was reading along, she talks about her birthday when she turned 65.
Yes.
I wasn't even born yet.
Oh,
and
just
she
be
was
quiet.
65 years old.
Just be quiet.
I had a fine
little
that
child
that made me giggle.
Hey, I have. I wrote some pages and some things down. Okay.
Oh, I'm starting to cry.
You are?
Well, just to summarize how I felt about it, you can see why President Hinckley is so sad at losing his wife, because she was a phenomenal lady. And as the more I read, the more I'm happy as I'm reading, but I'm just sad because you can just see why he's had such a hard time losing her.
You know, my husband told me once.
That's why I've been crying.
Well, I can understand her, but we were watching conference once, and my husband said, "When I grow up, I want to be him."
I love it.
And reading this, I finished it and I went, when I grow up, I want to be her.
Exactly.
She just, I remember someone saying that she said, keep an open pantry. Keep your kids happy, keep an open pantry. And so that's what I was wanting. Whenever the friends come over, I'm always, can I have a snack? All right, let's see what we have. Because I don't know why. There's something about, I need to find that quote.
Well, food makes people happy, so there you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But she's very welcoming. She always welcomed with open arms.
Well, did you see how many, I read through this, how many dinner parties she hosted?
Yes!
23 people, and she hadn't gone grocery shopping yet. And I'm like, how do you do that?
How in the world could you do that? You know, my macaroni and cheese on my shelf.
So I know. 23 people, ramen, here you go. What flavor do you want?
Over all these years, she was always talking about all the stuff that needed to be done in the yard. And I was thinking,
I thought the yard was
it
hilarious.
It never ends.
Always.
Oh, no. And especially about when she sold their, they sold their 3703 to
her daughter,
her
son.
And they're like, we thought we were going to be free of it, but now we have a house. And then,
I just thought
that was hilarious. Okay, here's this little quote I want to read from one of her letters. On page 33, it says, "I hope this letter doesn't sound like a lot of mumping. I have my opinion of people who write home to Mama about every little growing pain. But since I've already done a pretty good job, I might as well go all the way. Kathy has a mosquito bite on her ankle that itches like everything, and I've got a hangnail on my thumb that's driving me crazy."
I thought that was funny.
I love her little, I don't like this, but since I'm already here, we'll throw this in. And also on page 62, there was another quote on here that just, it touched my funny bone, but also was very good advice. She's talking about, "I'm glad M keeps you supplied with fresh fruit. Mm-hmm. You had better cultivate that friendship. It sounds to me like it pays off."
I thought that was cute. I did think that was good.
I thought that was very cute.
A little bit of humor in there.
Hillary, do you have any?
Yes, I'm looking for it.
Okay, while you're looking, yes.
Let me just share one of mine that I liked.
Okay, I thought you were still looking.
I even underlined it. This was June 3rd, 1976, and it's on page 106. And they had gone to their 50th LDS high school reunion.
Oh, yes.
Cute.
She says, "What a hoot." I just love that. But the part that I really like is that it says, "I sat next to the student body president from 1924, who was the master of ceremonies, and never have I sat by such an adorable, charming dinner partner. The dinner commenced at 7:30, and the program did not end until midnight. The later the hour got, the happier and noisier everyone became. It was a gala affair." Now, this is the part I love. dad, who she was referring to as President Glee, who didn't want to go in the first place, had the time of his life. He was the little bashful boy who had made good. Isn't that interesting?
That was sweet. I thought that was sweet that she said that.
I loved that.
I love the interesting little tidbits in there. I don't think she goes too much into the personal life of between her and dad.
No, I don't think
you know,
she does
between
either.
Her and President Glee, but the little insights I think are great. Because it humanizes it. How often do you think they must have the perfect life? And yet they talk about, you know, okay, for example.
It's killing me.
For example, on page 80, she talks about something that is, that last week, last Sunday at church, you know, we had this organizing of lines in the ward and a creation of a new ward. And I was thinking, all these people in the nursery leaders that I'm coordinator over, are being released, and they've been in there as long as I have. So I'm wondering when I'm going to get released, because the whole time we've lived here, which has been a little over a year, I've only sat with my husband in Sunday school once.
Okay, don't get me started, dear.
Okay, now, when I read this, it humbled me. Yes. She says, it was surely a treat to sit in a Sunday school class with him, meaning President Hinckley, for the first time in 22 years of matrimony.
I was thinking,
I'm complaining of a year. I just can't complain anymore. Oh, I thought what it was interesting how she talked about how much each hair.
I know how much it costs to get her hair done or set.
Yes,
in the hotel,
65 cents here,
65 cents, 90 cents in Hong Kong.
But in the country, they can get for 25 cents. And
oh, I know.
I just thought that was wonderful. And the list of like the clothing prices.
Clothes, I just went, oh my gosh! Look
some
at
of
that.
The shirts are the same price. You
know? I
know. So the prices of clothing haven't changed that
can
much.
Can I tell you my
apparently.
Favorite one?
Yeah,
I found it.
What page is it? It's page 110. June 8th, 1976.
No. I know which one you're going to talk about.
that's my favorite too.
It made me laugh. I was laughing until tears came.
I do too. I just busted up.
I'm glad you found that because that's
going to be that one made me laugh until
read
I couldn't stop.
Read
okay,
it.
I'm
going
to read it. Here we go, folks. Saturday, we went out to Jane's again to work on the shower. It has become a monumental task. This is the house that they're talking about, by the way.
The 37
that they moved away from.
The one that we talked about
here
a minute
ago. We thought we were getting rid of an old house, but not so. When we got home, I had left a pan of spaghetti with hamburger boiling away on the stove. The house was full of thick air and pungent smell. I was feeling terrible the whole week when I opened the garage door from the kitchen and found that Dad had pulled the hose inside with the spray sprinkler on and had absentmindedly turned on the tap. Water was hitting the ceiling and spraying from wall to wall. I simply cracked up. We looked at each other in total disbelief and wondered whatever was going to become of us.
That is my favorite story in this whole book.
I don't know why.
Hilarious.
I loved it because, you know, if you do something stupid, like when I went and took a shower and left pancakes cooking.
Luckily,
because it was the last batch, so I turned it down because the pan was already hot. So I turned it down to like 2 or 3 and just figured I'd let it finish. Then I go upstairs to take a shower and I come out and I'm like, this smells like something's cooking. And I go down there and sure enough, one side of my pancakes are now very, very dark brown.
Yes,
I did that twice.
You did
twice. I can't. I'm like, no, I'm never doing
it. I always
again.
Forget that I'm cooking macaroni and cheese for the kids. Like, I'll get the macaroni cookie and then I'll be like, that smells like burnt.
Oh,
no,
yeah, not again. That's not. Like, oh man, I did it again.
I'll put oil in the pan and warm it up to do something, and then go to check my email and be like, and I'll follow a link and I'll be reading, and then I'll. Smells like hot pan. Oh no!
Brady did that with milk. He was
boiling milk.
Boiling milk for the baby, and I'm like, Brady, what's that smell? He's like, oh my gosh! And he goes running in the kitchen, turns it off. He's like, oh good, the pan didn't burn all the way through. We're really lucky. That was a good pan, dear.
You know, I just wonder. Yeah. Can you imagine? It wasn't just one little thing though. It was a big thing.
That was a
you know
big
how you're
thing.
Like, oh, we're lucky the house didn't burn down. And then you're thinking, you know, and it's ironic because
the garage didn't.
The garage wouldn't have burned. You know, and the, where one could have criticized the other,
but they didn't.
But then. The other one did something almost as bad.
They laughed about it.
Looked at each other in total disbelief. Can you just imagine those two cute people looking at each other total disbelief.
It's like what we just say to each other. Just kind of shrug your shoulders. What could you say? I mean, I know. My initial reaction would be get mad, but then I'd have to be eating my words exactly. 2 seconds later.
I know. I sometimes I get after my husband for things, and I really shouldn't because
me too.
I end up going, oh, well. And then I usually tell him, well, I guess I can't really talk, can I? Because not 10 minutes later, I'm usually doing something just as
me
bad.
Me too.
I wanted to read this. I love the advice that she gives her kids sometimes.
What page?
It's page 102. What is this boy? What is with this boy thing with your girl? Utterly disgusting at the sixth grade level. I don't even want to know.
I don't
except
know
for maybe
either.
It could just be like she's
kissing
in love with the boys and
maybe
stuff.
Maybe it's kissing tag or something.
Yeah. Anyway, I love her advice. Maybe you had better paint some freckles on her face. Paint some freckles on her face and black out a front tooth.
That's great.
I think, maybe that's what it is. And you put some freckles, black out my daughter's teeth, and then...
There you go.
You know. But you know, another thing that I liked on page 108, just a few pages later, and this might be one of the things that you were talking about, feeling uncomfortable, but this made me feel better. She quotes, this is it, June 3rd, 1976. Dad is dragging his feet on getting the necessary shrubs to finish up the yard. So I decided I would take $100 of my savings and go down to the nursery and get the job done.
Good for her.
But I was, we're trying to get our yard in and everything. And so this was just like, and like dragging feet on getting shrubs for the yard. Yeah, I'm feeling that. You know, so I just think that was so cute.
There was one in here that I liked too that it made me go... Yeah, I've had that happen before, where she's standing in the line in the grocery
store.
Okay,
that's what I was going to bring up. It's on page 160.
Thank you, because I was like, I can't find it.
Yep, that's what I wanted to talk about.
I just went, it was actually nice to, well, you go ahead and read it, and I'll give my phone.
Oh, okay. She just says, Wednesday after work, Dad and I came home by way of the West Side Safeway to get some milk. It was 6 o'clock, the dinner hour. A little boy, about 8 years old, was ahead of me in the line. He meekly pushed a worn and torn food stamp coupon across the counter and said his mother wanted to know if he could get a can of soup with it. The clerk told him that he could not spend a food coupon that had been torn out of the book, and he went away empty-handed. It wasn't until I got out to the car that I realized that perhaps he was actually hungry with no food in the house. It has haunted me ever since. I don't know why I didn't have the presence of mind to take him back in the store and buy him a bag of groceries. Needless to say, I have eaten every meal since with a little more gratitude. Sometimes I forget that everyone does not live so well. I loved that story.
Yeah. That one, actually, it reminded me, there's been a couple, I can't think of a whole lot, thank goodness, but a couple of times where I've had an opportunity to serve and didn't. And I have to say, it was kind of nice to know that I wasn't the other one, the only one that messed up like that.
It makes you
feel guilty. You feel horrible about it.
I know.
Wouldn't you wonder, why didn't the spirit nudge me?
Yeah.
But maybe the spirit did.
Well,
maybe
she said, I didn't have the presence of mind. Now, I don't know
what
she
means
by that, but maybe that's what she's saying, that she wasn't in tune with the spirit enough to think,
oh,
my heavens, why, I should have just, bought the soup and...
That was, I've known for her, too. I read that and went, oh.
I know. That one really touched me.
And on the other hand, it actually made me feel a little bit better, too. Not quite so guilty for the couple of times I've maybe missed something as obvious as that kind of thing.
I love that, too.
Even more importantly, though, is even if you didn't, it would have been great if she did realize that or if you did realize that.
But now we'll realize it maybe a little bit more in the future.
The important thing is that if we had, we would have.
Mm.
There's some people who will not do anything for anybody because they feel like they haven't gotten what they wanted and what they deserve. And so they
what
just.
What an attitude. That's
sad.
But people do have that attitude
these
days. It's really pretty common.
Yeah, there's the remorse of, I wish I would have thought of that, or I wish I would have been able to do something. But when it comes down to it, the fact that you would have, if you could have, is what matters.
That's
exactly.
True.
That's
true.
I also loved her testimony at the bottom of page 161 about the Book of Mormon.
Yes, I thought that was great.
Finishing the Book of Mormon this morning in response to Dad's challenge. No 24-year-old boy could have written it. People wouldn't get into so much trouble if they would read it continuously. What a book.
I know. I loved that.
There's your testimony about the Book of Mormon right there.
This
what else needs to be said?
Read
She's
the,
a remarkable
But she goes
is.
On to not just read it, but read it continuously.
Yeah, exactly. And I like what she says. People wouldn't get into so much trouble.
If
they
would
read it. I
mean,
my
life
true.
Is certainly easier when I read it on
you
a
bet.
Regular basis.
I agree.
Because I am more in tune. So... Another thing, this letter was very full of things.
Oh,
and
yes.
What was
letter.
A big treat was, and I have it on here, the night they had dinner with Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, I love that.
And
that
it says,
great.
He has come to Salt Lake to film a 60-minute Christmas special for Bonneville International Corporation. And I was thinking, could it be? Could it
Mr.
really be?
Yes, of course Christmas. It
was. Yes. And then she said, we sat around at a round table with him and President and Sister Kimball and the Monsons. Thank goodness for the Monsons, who were showgoers and could talk to him intelligently about many of the movies he has made. He's talking, he is thrilled to be starring in the BIC film as it gives him an opportunity to direct the Tabernacle Choir.
That's what gave it away for
in
me.
One
like,
scene.
Oh, yep. That's Mr. Kruger's Christmas.
When he saw this in the script, he immediately decided to take it on. Also, he says it is the most refreshing telling of the Christmas story he has ever read. Now, you know when she was writing this, she probably had no idea the classic that Mr. Kruger's Christmas would become.
There would have been no way she would have.
And this is what, 1980 or something?
1980.
Yeah.
March.
I know, this reminds me, there's a line here.
We were
here.
Three, Shanda.
I know.
I was at the time.
There's a line here where it says, that was, you know, having dinner with Jimmy Stewart and
everything.
I know,
I like that.
She said after, this is September 30th, 1976, when she wrote this letter. She said, we were invited to Tiffany Attic Dinner Theater last week with BH and BS and Wives. The play was Barefoot in the Park and was done in super fashion. The acting was unbelievable. Some imported stars, some local, but all terrific. After the dinner at the country club with CG's golfing friends and dinner and theater at Tiffany's, I am beginning to feel like some sort of society woman.
I know, it's
so cute. Because, you know, I'm glad she said that because this isn't about in the middle of the book. And I was reading the first half and there's all these things about travel and meeting all these people and ambassadors. And I was thinking, that would be so intimidating for me. And yet she seemed to handle it with such grace and whatever. But then went to have her, you know, admit that she's starting to feel like some sort of society woman. It was very reassuring to me. You know, to see that she's sometimes felt, you know, that they took it all in stride, and I loved that.
I just can't get over how much she had on her plate. In the beginning, like, she's talking about how sick Dick was, and I'm just like, how did she do this? I'm complaining because my family's been sick off and on since January, February. Mm-hmm. And yet I looked at the time span of how long sick, and you get to the end here, and he's still sick.
Exactly.
Like, and I'm just going, oh, my word, what patience this woman has, because I'm so frustrated right now, and I'm irritated and I'm not thinking rationally sometimes and you know that kind of thing. And I'm just like, she's made it with five kids, her husband's gone
constantly,
perpetually.
She's basically raised those children.
She raised a kid, she gets lost on a bus in downtown Denver, ends up going back and forth, and
that would be me.
Me too. I have a lousy sense of direction.
Wasn't that interesting to read about the gas rations?
Yeah, the gas rations. I didn't realize it was, I knew during like in the late 70s, I knew there was, but I didn't realize there was anything before that.
If you,
too,
yeah, so. I read a lot of stuff about World War II, and I took a history class in that in college and everything. So I knew all about all the rationing and everything.
I didn't know gas was rationed. I knew other things were rationed.
Oh, everything.
Gas
everything
was
rationed.
They had coupons or something like that. She was talking about
that you could buy certain things on certain days.
Yeah, I knew that rubber and like tires and things like that,
sugar.
But I didn't know. And I knew sugar, but I didn't realize gas.
See, that was very interesting to me since my father, or my grandfather, my mom's dad, was in Hawaii during World War II. And so to read about this time period is very fascinating to me because I have both of my grandparents are gone, and so I can't directly ask them what it was like. So that was a treat for me. There was one thing that I wanted to read here since we're talking about her reading the Book of Mormon. I love how she said in on page 125, September 30th, 1976 still, is the one I had read from about the what page we were talking about? Oh, the society dinner, or society woman. Mm-hmm. She ends the letter with, I have a new project. Mm-hmm. One chapter a day from each of the standard works. I have been on it for 4 days and I'm only 3 days behind.
I'm so glad she said that. I am so glad she said that.
Better to have tried and failed than never to have tried.
I love that.
I thought, well, I adored that. How many times have I started reading the scripture saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I haven't done it? And so this just makes me feel better about my attempts at things.
That made me giggle. I just went, oh, I'm not a failure. Even though I try to read my scriptures every day.
She did too.
You know, I noticed that there's no mention of any animals or pets.
I don't know how they could, really.
To do pets, there's no pets. But then later on, she talks about one of her grandchildren that is into pets, and she says, I don't know where this thing with her animals comes from, because it must come from the Barnes' side, you know, the other side, not the Hinckley side, which I thought, oh, there it is, the confirmation, because I was wondering where, you know, didn't they have any pets, any cats or dogs, but, you know, apparently not.
You know, I think there's one thing that really sums up her, and it's the letter that President Hinckley wrote to her in 1999. It's at the very end.
What page is that?
It's on page 262. I mean, that whole letter is just absolutely beautiful, but it just really tells why this is an enjoyable book to read.
He says, "We have met the distinguished of the earth. We have spoken to millions who have appreciated you so greatly. With your familiar words, you have won the love of all who have heard you. Your down-to-earth good sense, your sparkling and refreshing wit, your quiet and unfailing wisdom, and your tremendous and ever-constant faith have won the hearts of all who have listened to you." I think that really sums us up this book.
It does.
You know?
I have some words here that, you know, if you could describe her, what words would you use? And I wrote, humble, witty, simple desires, long-suffering, mm-hmm. human.
Yes, very much so.
And there's so many more that could just add on to that, that describe Sister Hinckley.
You know, they always say, and you always hear this from the general authorities, they say they would never be as good as they are without the love of a good, supportive woman at their side. And you can see what they are saying.
Mm-hmm.
You look at these general authorities and what is on their plates and what they have to do. And you, if you didn't have a loving and supportive wife, they couldn't do it.
No, I can tell you I would have a hard time with his
much
travel.
Be hard.
Meeting him at the airport to give him his clean shirts and to see him off again.
45 minutes later.
I know. Bye.
I just went, and you haven't seen him for how long? And 45 minutes and he's gone? It'd be hard not to be resentful.
No, I would be resentful, mm-hmm. and that shames me.
But you know what? Let me tell you. When... I think that's why they don't call your husband or my husband as a general authority right off the bat. They call someone that's served in a bishopric, and then they call someone that's served in a state presidency, and then they call someone that's been...
They break you in.
Exactly, because having a husband that was in a bishopric for 3 years, it does take a lot of sacrifice. It does.
Well, he was also,
gone.
You know, being separated with when he had the job at the railroad company during the war.
Exactly.
That was even
so,
just...
But it, you know, I think it just gradually builds up, you know.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Seriously. And you know what? You are supported and you're never more blessed when your husband is serving in a calling
such as
that.
I agree with
that. You did that just...
I don't know from
never.
Personal experience, but...
You will find out someday.
I hope so.
You will.
I just don't want to be one of those resentful women while their husband's on the stand and the kids are going crazy in the pew. But I have such good girls that I'm
they'd
thinking,
be fine.
Why doesn't the Lord take advantage of this right now when my girls are really good?
Tell
so
your
wait,
boy
until
comes.
I have, well, or until I have twins. Do you have a children's feature? Oh, wait, before we
you
do one to that, though.
I totally spaced. I had all my Jambrett stuff at home. So we're going to have to do Jam... I didn't bring it. So we're going to have to do Jambrett
next
month. I had it all ready to go.
Oh,
I was so thrilled. I'd gotten all this stuff all together. And I just ran out the door because I'm on time.
You're already prepared.
I am already prepared.
Well, I'll ask the question then. Would you read this book again?
Yes.
Yeah, it was sweet. It did give you a little bit of an insight to what his life was like and her life and their family. And I just, it's kind of, because you don't usually get a glimpse of what the prophet's life is like and how their families
especially
operated.
Especially
from the wife's perspective.
Right.
I want to own it. I don't have my own copy, so I want to get one.
I might have my mind yet.
I got mine for Mother's
sweet.
Day. My husband bought it for me for Mother's
Day.
That's
sweet. I think it's, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Mm.
And it was just, there was so much that I felt that I kind of saw in her writing that, you know, that I could relate to, that I think I would like to be able to not necessarily read the whole thing, but flip through to the letters that I, you know, have the things that I like in them for my girls when they get older.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, since we don't have a children's literature highlight,
sorry.
We can talk about
the failure. Sorry,
I spaced it.
Sorry. That's all right.
I was scrapbooking before I came over. Sorry.
You know, I didn't finish the main title. She didn't finish
the second one.
You forgot the chat. We
I
have,
did.
You know,
we are a pair of pairs.
We're a trio of.
It was one of those days.
That's
yeah.
right.
It's all right. It's all good.
We still had a nice discussion.
Yeah. I guess we need to sum up with a contest.
And our books for next time.
Okay, first, the books for next time are 1776 by David McCullough. And 1776 is nonfiction, but we're talking about this because it is July next month, and we'll be celebrating two things here in Utah, July 4th, Independence Day for the United States, and also July 24th, which is Pioneer Day for the LDS members of this, and also because that's, you know, when the city was... You know, this is the place and the whole thing.
When they came into the valley.
Yeah, so we're going to read 1776 for July 4th, and then in honor of July 24th, we're going to read Against All Odds by Shirley Ballman, spelled B-A-H-L-M-A-N-N.
Wow.
It's amazing pioneer stories of courage and survival. So two nonfiction books.
Ooh,
it'll be different for
I'm
us.
I'm rubbing off on the girls at this table. This is nice.
Well, it's written... It's written in fiction style.
It'll be interesting.
It's not just, forward to reading it's like they're having conversations.
I love pioneer stories.
Yeah, it's stories based on true incidents.
See, I have a question to ask you guys. Do you guys have pioneers in your background?
Yeah, my husband does.
See, I have lots of them.
Me
so
too.
It's wonderful. That's why I love reading about, I like reading my own,
your own
history, family histories. And, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting stuff.
I wish I knew more. My husband had like two or three of his family in the Mormon Battalion.
Cool.
But that's neat. I want to research some more on that. Anyway, let's talk about the contest real quick and then we'll close up. If you haven't listened to segment one, then you can find some more details on the contest on segment one. Since this is segment two, we'll just sum up and say, we're having a contest to kickstart participation in the forum, and there's three ways to win a prize in a drawing to get your name entered into this drawing for an autographed copy of Stephanie Black's The Believer, which she so kindly donated. Unfortunately, the three of us are not able to qualify.
Oh, no.
Which really bums. Yeah.
Yes.
The three ways you can win are to join the mailing list by signing or by logging into the website, to refer a friend, have them join the mailing list, and not only will they get their name in, but if they email me your name as the person who referred them, then I will enter your name again, as well as theirs, for joining the mailing list. And the third way is a qualifying post on the message board. A qualifying post is a couple of lines long, a question or comment in regards to the discussion, what we're talking about, that adds to, or, you know, just continues on the discussion in the board. You can go ahead and post Me Toos or something simple, you know, just a quick, I understand that, but those aren't going to qualify. So, if you have any questions on that, please feel free to email me. We'll have all of that up on the website so you can find out all of the nitty-gritties. And, you know, we look forward to hearing, well, reading all of your posts on the message board and getting to know you better. So come in and join the forum, join the mailing list, start posting, and get your name in. You know, every post that qualifies gets your name in. So the more you post, the more likely you are to win. So come and chat away with us and maybe even walk away with an autographed copy of The Believer. So, and we want to thank Stephanie again for her kindness there. All right, that's it. We covered everything. So
until next month.
See you next month.